Hare Krishna. So today we are going to cover 1st Canto 18th chapter, verses 18 from 18 to 23, and then Vrajabhakti Mataji will continue from 23 to 24 to 31. So we'll start with invocation prayers. This is based on the teachings of Srila Prabhupada. Start with the invocation prayer.
Narayanam namaskritya naram chaiva narottamam devim sarasvatim vyasam tato jayamudirai nashta praishva bhadreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya bhagavati uttama shloke bhaktir bhakti naishtiki.
So I think today's verses are appropriate for me because like Suta Goswami is talking about his disqualification to speak, and he's talking about disqualification, so I am nowhere like near also. But just because you all's prayer and Guru Maharaj's mercy and Krishna's mercy, I'm here to talk about that. So in chapter 18, like till now we have covered up to verse 17, and in first four verses, Suta Goswami begins describing Maharaj Parikshit's life, which contains wonderful dealings with Krishna. And then from 5 to 9, we covered how he Suta Goswami again continues describing how he dealt with the appearance of Kali in his kingdom. And then from 10 to 17, which was covered by Shyamala Mataji, right? And then in those verses, the sages glorify Suta and the importance Suta Goswami and the importance of hearing about Krishna from great devotees, and then request him to describe. So all the devotees, they are hearing about the glories of Krishna, and then sages wanted to hear more, so they are requesting him to talk more about Krishna, to talk about all the pastimes that he heard when Sukadev Goswami was telling all those pastimes to, describing all those pastimes to Suta to Parikshit Maharaj, and he was present in that assembly. So then all the sages, they are more eager. They are actually, in those verses it's described that they are so eager that they didn't want to hear anything but about Krishna, and so they are requesting Suta Goswami to talk more about all those pastimes. And from verses 18 to 23, now Suta Goswami begins. The sages are requesting him to talk about Krishna, and then he begins to speak in these verses. And he's explaining like how purification happens by hearing about Krishna, and then begins to explain Krishna's exalted qualities. So in verse 18, we all recite together.
वृत्तानुवृत्त्या विलोम जाता दौष्कुल्यमात्यं विदुनोति शीघ्रं महात्मानां विधान योगा.
Yeah, the translation is also changed actually. It's okay. Sri Suta Goswami said, "O God, although we are born in a mixed caste, we are still promoted in birthright simply by serving and following the great who are advanced in knowledge. Even by conversing with such great souls, one can without delay cleanse oneself of all disqualifications resulting from lower births." So here, I was hearing His Holiness Ramapada Maharaj's class, and he was telling that here Suta Goswami starts like answering the questions that sages had asked him, and answering his request. But then he doesn't say that, oh, you all are thinking that I'm qualified, so I should start speaking. He was not proud like that. But he starts with humility. Like, he says that I'm very disqualified to say. So that's why he's bringing, like, he's listing all the disqualification one by one. And then first disqualification he says is that he was lower born. And then, like, I think we all know that Suta Goswami is son of Roma Harshana. And Roma Harshana, he was also a very qualified Brahman, but he was born of Pratilom marriage. So in Pratilom marriage, the wife is of higher caste and husband is of lower caste than wife. So a kid's born out of that marriage is called Pratilom marriage, and that's why he's telling that he was lower born, like he was born like in a lower birth. So that was the first disqualification. That's why he's telling that even though we were mixed caste, he was not very high caste. He was mixed caste, but still the importance given in this verse is association of devotees. So even though he was disqualified by his birth, but because he was qualified because he had association of Sukadeva Goswami. So so here, like that's what is the stress of the verse, that by associating with the pure devotees of the Lord, all the disqualifications because of the lower birth are one becomes free from all those disqualifications. And Maharaj also mentions that not only disqualification because of lower birth, but there are many other disqualifications like wicked mind or wicked mentality or attraction to too much attraction for impermanent and all. But if we keep associating with the pure devotees, and then all those disqualifications are diminished slowly. So here also family lineage, that Roma Harshana, and again Maharaj tells about Roma Harshana that he was reciting Bhagavatam and in one assembly, and in that assembly Lord Balram comes himself. So everybody who was sitting in the assembly, they got up and they offered the respect to Lord Balram. But Roma Harshana thought that he's reciting Bhagavatam, so he doesn't need to get up and pay his respect to Lord Balram. So he didn't get up from his seat and he kept reciting Bhagavatam. So here he was reciting Bhagavatam, which was glorification of Lord himself. But when Lord comes, he fails to pay respect. So he was out of his pride. He fails to pay respect to the Lord, like object of his recitation or object of his glorification. He fails to pay respect. So that's why Balram kills him. So Suta Goswami thinks that as also a disqualification, his lower birth, and then this this incident also. And so the stress in this verse is that association of pure devotee brings anybody removes all the disqualification. And the example given here is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he was present, he made so many disqualified living entities just by his association. He made them qualify. And one example given is Haridas Thakur. Haridas Thakur was born in a Muslim family, but still, Lord Chaitanya, by giving his association and not considering birth as the qualification to become qualified for, he made him Namacharya. And then in purport, he clears it. Here, like this is the from purport. He clearly stated that any man, whatever he may be, whether a brahmana or shudra by birth, or a householder or mendicant in the order of society, if he is conversant with the science of Krishna, he can be accepted as an acharya or a spiritual master. So here, that is from the purport. And so, and again in the purport it's mentioned further that Suta Goswami, he was speaking in the assembly of all the rishis. So He had double qualification actually, in the sense that he had double association in the, so association of pure devotees makes one qualified, and here Sutta Goswami had double association. Like he heard all the all whatever is going to speak from Sukadev Goswami, who was very qualified, and then the second association he had was of all the devotees who were also equally qualified. They were also very qualified sages in of Naimasharanya. But they just thought because Sukadev Goswami heard it from Sukadev Goswami, that's why he was more qualified to talk. But all the sages were also equally qualified. So this way he had double association, one by hearing from Sukadev Goswami, and now he's preaching to all the sages of the Naimisharanya. That's why Prabhupada mentions that he had, and that's why he is more qualified because of his double association to talk about Bhagavatam, and that's why all his disqualification due to birth are all freed from, he was free from all the disqualifications. And further, so we can see that from all this, like thousands of years ago also, all Sutta Goswami, even if he was lower birth, all the sages, the Sukadev Goswami did not say no, that you can, he's not going to preach all the transcendental pastime of Krishna to Sutta Goswami. So that's and then other thing, all the sages of Naimasharanya, probably they were of higher birth than Sutta Goswami himself, but still they did not deny that we are not going to listen from Sutta Goswami because he was lower born. So this way, in that age also, it was all this, like in India we see, right, that because of higher birth only, like you have to do some brahminical activities, you have to have higher birth. But that was not followed in that time. And that was, we can see that in Bhagavatam itself. And then all our acharyas were following the same. Like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he did not see the birth of Haridas Thakur, but he made him qualified Namacharya. So birth is not the qualification. And also Prabhupada also followed the same principle. He also came to Western country and he gave Brahminical initiation to so many Western devotees who were not qualified by birth, but Prabhupada made him qualified by his association and by preaching to him. So that's why birth is not the qualification, but anybody who is in associating with the pure devotees makes him qualified for doing devotional services. So that's what Prabhupada is mentioning in the purport, that system, caste system did not exist before, but it just the caste system did not exist before, but it just started manifesting in like last 100 or 150 years of Hinduism. So, and the example given is like Ganges, water of Ganges. Even if it is polluted, like you see so many bubbles and so many things in the water of Ganges, but still the water is considered pure, and all the pure devotees, they go and take bath in river Ganges, even though it seems to be unpure, like unclean, but still that's not the qualification. And then same related the verse Nectar of Instruction verse 6, which also talks about that birth and the form, like or the bodily form is not the qualification. We'll just read translation of this.
So is Narada low birth?
Yeah, he was also lower born, and still he got association of those pure devotees and he was elevated. That's a good example, yeah. Being situated in his original Krishna conscious position, a devotee does not identify with the body. Such a devotee should not be seen from a materialistic point of view. Indeed, one should overlook a devotee's having a body born in low family, a body with bad complexion, a deformed body, or a diseased or infirm body. According to the ordinary vision, such imperfections may seem prominent in the body of pure devotee. But despite such seeming defects, the body of pure devotee cannot be polluted. It is exactly like water of Ganges, which sometimes during the rainy season are full of bubbles, foam and mud. The Ganges water do not become polluted. Those who are advanced in spiritual understanding will bathe in Ganges without considering the conditions of the water. So the verse says, and this purport also talks about the same thing. And then here in verse in the purport, Prabhupada also mentions that those who have taken birth in India, they should be, we'll just read the purport. Such a power of pure devotee of the Lord, such is the power of pure devotee of the Lord. The Ganges water is accepted to be pure, and one can become purified after taking bath in the waters of Ganges. But as far as the great devotee of the Lord are concerned, they can purify a degraded soul even by being seen by the law-born, and what to speak of association. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted to purify the whole atmosphere. So just by seeing a pure devotee of the Lord also, one can get purified. And that's why Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted to purify the whole atmosphere of the entire world. That's why he says that it remains the task with the Indians to take up this task scientifically and thus do the best kind of humanitarian work. So he wanted all the Indians specifically to go and preach. So like Prabhupada, in the Chaitanya, where is that verse? Bharat Bhumi Te Janma Manishya Janma Hoy. So that is there. So if you are born as an Indian, so that is your duty. And that's order of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So we should go and preach out there. And that's all another one also, right? Jare Dekho Tahe Kaho Krishna Upadesh Amara Gyae. So Prabhupada, Maharaj was saying that Amara Gyae means it's order of Lord Chaitanya. So we should go and start preaching. That's it. That's about first verse. Let's start with the second. And what to speak of those who are under the direction of great devotees, chanting the holy name of the unlimited, who has unlimited potency. The personality of Godhead, unlimited in potency and transcendental by attributes, is called Ananta. So in the first verse, the stress was that association of the devotee makes one qualified. And then here the verse is that chanting of the holy name is also makes one qualified. So either by association or chanting, one, all the disqualifications are removed and one becomes qualified to talk about glories of the Supreme Lord. And here Maharaj was explaining in his class that Sutta Goswami, he starts with his disqualification that he is low born, so that's why he is disqualified. And he again continues that Supreme Lord is unlimited, like he has he has unlimited potency and he's transcendental by attribute. So who can talk about like who? And he thinks that he is limited. So how can a limited talk about unlimited? That was he continues like that. So that's the reason why he says this verse. So here like mainly glories of the holy name in the purport. So we'll read this part of purport. This is really nice. Dvijabandhu or less intelligent, uncultured man, born of higher caste, put forward many arguments against the lower caste men becoming brahmanas in his life. So Maharaj was telling that when Prabhupada used to give initiation to all the Western devotees, there were many Indians who were like born in high class Brahmin families. They put out so many objections, like they were not happy with Prabhupada doing that. But still Prabhupada, because he had to follow Shastra and he wanted to follow all the acharyas who did that. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did not see by birth qualification. So that's why he still continued doing that. And he has to face many difficulties doing that, but still he accepted to follow the principle. They argue that the birth in the family of Sudras or less than Sudras is made possible by one's previous sinful acts, and that one therefore has to complete the terms of disadvantages due to lower birth. And to answer this false logician, Srimad Bhagavatam asserts that one who chants the holy name of the Lord under the direction of a pure devotee can at once get free from the disadvantages due to lower caste birth. So here, like in first verse, he says that because of the association of the Lord, one becomes qualified. And here he's telling that by chanting the holy name of the Lord, one gets free from the disadvantages due to the lower birth. A pure devotee of the Lord does not commit any offense while chanting the holy name of the Lord. Now he is glorifying the chanting of the holy name of the Lord. And he does not commit any offense while chanting the holy name of the Lord. There are 10 offenses in the chanting of the holy name of the Lord. To chant the holy name under the direction of a pure devotee is offenseless chanting. Offenseless chanting of the holy name of the Lord is transcendental, and therefore such chanting can at once purify one from effects of all kinds of previous sins. And here Maharaj was explaining that if we chant offenselessly, then it, like as stated in 18th chapter, that if one surrenders to Lord, then he takes care of him. He gets all, like what is that? Surrender, sarvadharman parityaja mam ekam param. All sinful reactions. Yeah. So he's. So if the chanting is so powerful that it delivers one from the all sinful reactions, that means it can definitely qualify one or free one from disqualifications of the lower birth.
Mataji, who drew that picture on the right side? It looks like somebody stepping on the holy name. So maybe we should have like a picture where holy name is the top and we are holding on to it.
Mm.
You cannot step on the holy name, you can hold on to the holy name.
Or he's taking the stairs.
Yeah, he's taking the stairs, but you cannot have the holy name on the floor. Offensive chanting.
Yeah.
I think the gist of the picture is that as you chant,
and you go up and up, yeah.
Krishna.
But the feet, see his feet is on Krishna.
I think the gist of the picture was
I know, understand the gist, but it's offensive. You should have the holy name on the top and then you should be holding on to it and going.
That's
We are natural monkeys, right? We are natural monkeys. The monkey bar seems better for us.
So such chanting can at once purify one from the effects of all kind of previous sins. So it can also qualify one due to the, and it can free one from the disqualifications of the lower birth. And this offenseless chanting indicates that one has fully understood the transcendental nature of the holy name and has surrendered unto the Lord. Transcendentally, the holy name of the Lord and the Lord himself are identical, being absolute. And the holy name of the Lord is as powerful as the Lord. So that's what. So Lord, he promises that he will free one from all the reactions of the sinful activities. So, and now if we chant the holy name, holy name is equally powerful as the Lord. So chanting the holy name can also free one from the disqualifications of the lower birth. And here in the purport, Prabhupada gives this. The Lord's unlimited power is extended on and on by the unlimited expansions of the devotees and incarnations. And thus every devotee of the Lord and incarnations also can be equally surcharged with the potency of the Lord. And since the Lord is surcharged with the potency of the, since the devotee is surcharged with the potency of the Lord, even fractionally, the disqualification due to the lower birth cannot stand in the way. So Maharaj was explaining that Sutta Goswami thinks that he is disqualified and to talk, but talk about unlimited. So here Maharaj says that, but if unlimited comes in the contact, I mean limited comes in the contact with unlimited, then that unlimited can make any limited human being also, like he can give unlimited power so that he can talk about unlimited just because of descending mercy. So So that's the qualification, and because of the descending mercy, Sutta Goswami recognizes that because he is unqualified, because of the descending words of mercy, he is qualified to talk about Bhagavatam. That's about 20. We can recite together.
एतावतालं ननु सूचितेन गणेन साम्यादिशतो विभूति यस्यां विलेरुञ्जुषतेन भूमिषो.
It is now ascertained that he, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is unlimited and there is none equal to him. Consequently, no one can speak of him adequately. Great demigods cannot obtain the favor of Goddess of Fortune, even by prayers. But this very Goddess, renders a service unto the Lord, although he is unwilling to have such service. So here again he continues glorification of the Supreme Lord, that he is unlimited and there is no one equal to him. And consequently no, so that's why he says that is the reason that no one can speak adequately about him. And then he gives the example that goddess of fortune, like everybody is willing to get the favors of goddess of fortune, but this goddess of fortune is serving Lord eternally.
So question here, Madhuri. So Lakshmi Sahasra Shata Sambrahma Sevya Manam. So how do we understand that in context of this? We always see one Lakshmi serving one Vishnu.
Sahasra.
Sahasra, thousands, millions.
Thousands. Because he is unlimited, right?
It's
in
Goloka.
This is also Goloka.
Gopi serving Krishna.
Yes.
We don't see Lakshmi Sahasra. It doesn't say Gopi Sahasra.
Okay,
the verse doesn't say.
Which Vishnu
is this? This is Garbhodakshaya.
How many
But that one, that description, right? That is
spiritual God, that's what I meant.
No, but even in the applicable
yes. But devotees have never pictured millions of Lakshmis trying to serve Krishna.
So, is this
a Gopi Sahasra Sadashambrahma Sevya Manam. This is Lakshmi Sahasra.
Gopi is all form, yeah. Radharani explains herself, right? For
in that Ramanuja temples, they have Ashta Lakshmi. What is that? Eight Lakshmi.
Yeah, that is different. So here again, he is glorifying Lord Vishnu, and then he says that, you can read from purport. The personality of Godhead or the Parameshwara, Parabrahman, according to the Shrutis, has nothing to do. He has not equal, nor does anybody excel him. He has unlimited potencies, and his every action is carried out systematically in his natural and perfect ways. Thus, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is full in himself, and he has nothing to accept from anybody else, including the great demigods like Brahma. Others ask for the favors of Goddess of Fortune, and despite such prayers, she declines to award such favors. But still she renders service unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, although he has nothing to accept from her. So here Prabhupada explains that Lord is complete within himself. He doesn't have anything, like he doesn't, and in the further in the purport also Prabhupada says that he doesn't need to accept anything from anybody. And at the time of creation, like when time comes for creation, he does not ask help of Lakshmi Devi. Even though Lakshmi Devi is serving him eternally, he does not ask any favors from Lakshmi Devi for creating human being. He creates Lord Brahma, first living entity, from his body itself. He doesn't like how normal human beings are born. So he doesn't impregnate Lakshmi Devi to create Lord Brahma. He is full in himself. He doesn't need anybody's help, or he doesn't need any anything. He doesn't have anything to accept from anybody. So he's complete, and that's why he's called Yogeshwara. And all the demigods, demigods like Lakshmi Devi, Brahma, or Shiva, everybody, they are not complete by himself. They are complete due to the association of the Lord, or they are complete because of the powers given to them by the Lord. And that's why mainly he's explaining that Lord is unlimited, and he is full in himself. There is nothing he has to accept from others, and there is nothing he needs from anybody. Mainly that verse. Verse
21. Jagat Ko Nama Loke Ba Bhagavat Padartha.
Who can be worthy of the name of the Supreme Lord but the Supreme but the personality of Godhead Shri Krishna? Brahmaji collected the water emanating from the nails of his feet in order to award it to the Lord Shiva as a worshipful welcome. This very water, the Ganges, is purifying the whole universe, including Lord Shiva. So again, he continues to glorify Supreme Lord that that who else can be the worthy of the name Supreme Lord except from anybody? Who else can be worthy except from Lord Vishnu, Lord Krishna himself? So here we read from the purport. This is very important. The conception of many gods in the very Vedic literature by ignorant is completely wrong. The Lord is one without the second, but he expands himself in many ways, and this is confirmed in Vedas. Such expansion of the Lord are limitless, but some of them are living entities. So here some of them are like, here we try to explain how like what are the unlimited potency of Lord Krishna. So from Lord Krishna, Mahavishnu comes, and from him, Garbhodakshayi Vishnu comes, and then he enters all the universes. And also from Lord Krishna, Shiva, Shiva Tattva comes. And then, Mahashiv, yeah, Shiva Tattva is Sadashiv, Sadashiv. And then Sambhu, who is like, I think it's too detailed, I don't want to. So that's unlimited, yeah. You can explain.
Is it required? The size, what is the size, P, size T?
Oh, so these
it's
are
universes,
sizes of universe.
Universes, different universes, yeah.
So not all the universes are the same size. Ours is the smallest.
Where is it said like that?
It's in Bhagavad.
So in the purport, Prabhupada is explaining that like even powerful demigods like Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, they also worship Lord Vishnu only. So that's why they also worship Lord Vishnu, and even they are not complete without Lord Vishnu's power for them. So whatever they are, whatever power they are getting, they are because of Lord Vishnu's power given to them. Like, or as we said, like unlimited gives some makes anybody any limited living entity also.
Can you show
powerful.
The matrix, Madhavi, without this box model?
I don't know how to do
it.
Because this text is powerful.
Yeah.
It's a PDF, so
it's nice analysis.
But in the,
but
yeah, in the purport, Prabhupada is mentioning.
First, it's supposed to be animation. First, it will come, and the next, it's supposed to come. So now, see, there will be an option. Right?
Yeah. Probably. I don't know. So yeah, and then he's telling in the purport, he's explaining that all the demigods like Lakshmi Devi or Lord Shiva or Lord Brahma, they are powerful because they are the expansions of the Lord. Otherwise, they are not independently powerful, and they are like, and they themselves are engaged in the in serving Supreme Lord all the time, eternally. They are also worshipping Supreme Lord, so that powerful they are. And then at the end, he's telling that all the sampradayas, major sampradaya like Brahma sampradaya, Lakshmi sampradaya, Rudra sampradaya, and Kama sampradaya, all the sampradaya, they say that Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead, and there's no personality is equal to him or greater than him. Actually, in fact, we have the second offense also, right? That it is offense to consider names of Lord Vishnu or Lord Shiva or Lord Brahma to be
equal
to or independent of Lord. So that's, it's offensive to think any other demigods or any living entity higher than the Lord himself. So like in all these verses, he's glorifying because he's telling that Lord is unlimited, and I am just qualified to describe this unlimited because I have the descending mercy from Sutta Goswami. Again, he continues. Self-controlled person who are attached to the Supreme Lord Shri Krishna can all of a sudden give up the world of material attachment, including the gross body, and subtle mind, and go away to attain the highest perfection of renounced order of life, by which non-violence and renunciation are consequential. So here he says this verse that he described the glories of the Lord, and he's saying that one can surrender to the Lord if one is self-controlled, and that's why he's describing the qualities of self-controlled person in this verse. So in the purport, in he's telling that he begins the purport by saying that self-controlled person who are attached to the Supreme Lord Shri Krishna can all of a sudden give up the world of material attachment, including gross. Only the self-control can gradually attach to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So only self-controlled person can gradually attach to the Supreme Personality of God. If you are not self-controlled, then it's very hard to surrender to the Supreme Lord.
So Maharaj, a question. I know we should wait till the end, but we'll miss that. Not engage in sense enjoyment more than necessary. But in recently, chapter 4 of Bhagavad Gita, I was reading, Prabhupada says clearly that regulated sense enjoyment is okay, but that can also lead to fall down.
Yeah, more than necessary means regulated, right? I mean,
yeah, but even that
you
is dangerous.
Eat, yeah. So that, yeah, that can also, if probably. Yeah.
Initially, regulated sense enjoyment,
mm-hmm.
but eventually.
But then, eventually, once you get the higher taste, you will lose the taste of self, and right? You will lose the taste. As you get the higher taste, you will lose the taste of those sense enjoyment. So he, in the purport, he describes that self-controlled person means not engage in sense enjoyment more than necessary. So Prabhupada gives examples that you sleep, eat whenever it's necessary, or sleep whenever, take rest whenever it's necessary, but not more than what is required. And also he says that indulging in the dry speculation of philosophical discussion is also kind of sense gratification if it's not done for Krishna, or it's not done as a service to Krishna.
Actually,
and
working in IT is also sense gratification because it stimulates our senses, right? When you draw a nice visual flow, isn't it? At least I feel sense gratification working in Microsoft.
Depends on the consciousness.
Yeah.
That is there, but it is also sense gratification.
You're doing as a service.
As a service
to
Krishna.
Yeah.
Krishna,
then.
Like Prabhuji makes this PDF service.
PDF for Krishna is Krishna.
No, it's
but PDF for work is borderline.
Okay, so one.
Yeah, of course, you are all there, but for people who are not there.
So, if one is not self-controlled, then the results are one. Results, it leads to the path of darkness, and then. So then that's why Vedas mentioned that it's better to go to the path of light, go towards the light, but not go to the path of the darkness. And one can do that by engaging senses in the service of the Krishna. Like it said in 259, right, that if you get the higher taste, then the lower taste is
Amanitva Madam Dipvam, that person,
13th
chapter.
No. Vishaya. No, these qualities at the bottom, qualities.
Yeah, those are.
Idleness means freedom from vanity. Amanitva Madam Dipvam, 13th chapter. But it's mentioned in multiple places in scriptures.
And also Prabhupada mentions that that self-control cannot be attained by artificially stopping the senses. So that's what this verse says, 259, that if you restrain your senses, still the taste of sense objects will be there. And that's why instead of artificially stopping the senses from material enjoyment, it's better to engage the senses into the service of the Lord. And that will, once you get the higher taste, slowly your the lower taste will be, or the inclination to do material enjoyment will go slowly. And then the result of the higher taste, in it further says in the purport that the result of the higher taste is one gets highest perfection, and that's a Paramhamsa stage. So and then once you come to Paramhamsa stage, as a result of devotional service, you get all these qualities as a byproduct. They said that once you do the you will be decorated with all these qualities, and those qualities are pridelessness, freedom from vanity, non-violence, tolerance, simplicity, worship, devotion, sincerity, and respectability. And then Prabhupada further explains in the purport that what does real non-violence means is free from envy. So once one reaches to the Paramhamsa stage, he's free from envy or he's non-violent because he doesn't have any motivation for sense enjoyment. So he sees everyone. He is not envious of anybody because he sees everybody in the relation of with Krishna only. So those are the qualities. And further, Prabhupada says that what is real renunciation? Real renunciation means perfect dependence on the mercy of the Lord and not on any material nature. So all these things are described in this. So as a result of devotional service or as a result of association and chanting, one becomes qualified to talk about Krishna, and then one becomes like a self-controlled person, and then gets attachment to the holy name of the Lord. Last
verse.
O Rishis, who are as powerfully pure as the sun, I shall try to describe to you the transcendental pastime of Vishnu as far as my knowledge is concerned. As the birds fly in the sky as far as their capacity allows, so do the learned devotees describe the Lord as far as their realization allows. So this is very simple. So he agrees that he will talk about the pastime of the Lord due to the descending mercy he received from Sukadeva Goswami. And then he says that I will narrate them as far as my realization allows me to. So this is nice purport. I took the whole purport. So the Supreme Absolute Truth is unlimited. No living being can know about the unlimited by his limited capacity. The Lord is impersonal, personal and localized. By his impersonal feature, he is all-pervading Brahman. By his localized feature, he is present in everyone's heart as supreme soul, and by his unlimited personal feature, he is the object of transcendental loving service by his fortunate associates and the pure devotees. The pastimes of the Lord in different features can only be estimated partly by the great learned devotees. So Srila Sutta Goswami has rightly taken this position in describing the pastimes of the Lord as far as he has realized. Factually, only the Lord himself can describe himself, and his learned devotee can also describe him as far as the Lord gives him the power of description. So, previous verses we talked, right? He is unlimited, but he can make somebody powerful to speak about glories about him. And then one can speak as the God has given the power. That's it. Done. Any question? So the last verse is like that, simple.
Mother, can you go back 2 slides? I just wanted to note down the verse numbers for that.
Which
Paramhamsa definition from you had quoted Srimad Bhagavatam, 5th chapter, 5:18-12.
Mm-hmm.
That verse says.
So I was hearing Ramapada Maharaj's
shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, for him all the good qualities manifest.
So Maharaj was describing the pastime of Roma Harshana Sutta, like he does not get up from his seat, and so in that connection he was telling one pastime of Srila Prabhupada, and he was describing that once Srila Prabhupada was he was coming from somewhere and he's coming to airport to I don't remember which place he was talking about. But so all the devotees in the temple, they wanted to receive him give him very good reception when he comes to the airport. But at the same time, they wanted to give very good reception when he arrives to the temple also. And it was a small community of devotees, so it was not good. Like if somebody, Maharaj was telling that nobody was ready to stay back. So they all wanted to go and receive also, and they all wanted to. So they made a plan. Temple president made a plan that all the devotees will go and receive him at the airport. And then who is driving Prabhupada, he will take a longer route and he will come to the temple, and all others will take a shorter route and come. But then Maharaj was telling that for some reason it did not work out, and by like Prabhupada reached there to the temple before everybody, before anybody could reach there. So then only person at the temple when Prabhupada arrived was the, it was noon aarti going on, so only Pujari who was doing the noon aarti, she was present, and nobody else was there. So she was doing the aarti and she saw Prabhupada all of a sudden. So what she did was she took put everything down, and then she came out of the altar. She paid obeisances to Srila Prabhupada, and then she went again on the altar and she continued. And she was not sure what to do at that time. So then after that, after some time, she asked Prabhupada, was it proper? What I did was proper or not? And then Prabhupada says, yeah, it was proper. So Maharaj was telling that even in nectar of devotion, it says, right, that it's not proper to worship anybody in front of the deities, but this was proper. So Prabhupada made, as an Acharya, he made this proper because he wanted to teach his disciples, or all his Western disciples, that the higher principle is to serve your spiritual master. Mm-hmm. And because they didn't know anything, so to teach this higher principle, he allowed that. He said, yeah, it was proper. And then he also allowed, he also used to allow, right, when everybody, they will do Guru Puja, he used to allow them. He used to sit on the Vyasasan and used to allow all his Western devotees to do Guru Puja because to see this higher principle, to teach them this higher principle. He said that he allowed this. So that was nice. And here, he was connecting that here, Aroma Harshana Sutta, he did not get up when Lord himself arrived, even though he was glorifying Lord. But here,
related to this, another pastime of Prabhupada. One time Prabhupada was walking to the temple or somewhere, he was walking in, and this one of the Prabhupada disciples, he was actually doing Gayatri. So Prabhupada walked in and he walked, and then this person was still doing Gayatri. Then Prabhupada asked him, what are you doing? I'm chanting the Gayatri. Maybe what is the use?
Your spiritual master walks by, yeah.
And you are not ready to bow down.
He didn't talk to that person. Actually, he asked the other disciple, what was he doing? Why he didn't offer obeisance? He said, Prabhupada, he was chanting Gayatri. Prabhupada said, what is the use?
Yeah.
So the principle is, the spiritual master is there.
Yeah, we should always.